I'm Ted Baker in the studios of WEOS and WHWS at the Scandling Center here at Hobart and William Smith, and this is the Hobart Football Podcast, Episode 36. We're joined by the head coach of the Statesman, Kevin DeWall. Welcome back.
Good morning, Ted.
Before we talk about the game, you made me cry last week, Coach.
How's that?
I got on Twitter Saturday, and I saw the helmet stickers.
Yeah.
Tell us about the tribute to Muff.
Yeah, I mean, those that knew Terry Muffley, Coach Muff to me, and Muff for those that know him, he's a special, special person and great family. And just when he passed earlier this year, we knew right away we wanted to do something. It's a small something, but his impact on our program lasts. You know, his DNA is still going to be imprinted in our program for many, many years for all these guys. And it was emotional because I had a chance to talk to a lot of our players about him who maybe didn't know, didn't get a chance to meet him directly. but just his legacy lives on. And it was just a small token for him and his family to know that we're thinking of him every day. And you know, Coach Muff's made a huge impact on me personally and a lot of our coaches and a lot of our guys in our program and the alumni know how important he is. So the Muff sticker, we talked to him and put it on and we wear it all year long. And I'm sure he helped us on Friday night the way that Coach Muff always helped us.
First time I met him, I kept calling him Coach. And then I called the house one day and his wife Cindy answered and I said, can I talk to Coach? And she turns around and yells, Muff, it's Ted Baker. I'm going, well, if his wife calls him Muff, I guess.
Yeah. That's why the Muff sticker was fitting, you know, in terms of like anyone that knew him, he knew him more that way. You know, early on, I was always Coach Muffley. And, you know, he never corrected me, but it turned into Muff pretty quickly.
So a come from behind 10-7 win over Alfred, Friday night lights with a little lightning delay in the middle. First question is, what changed with the offensive line at the half? It didn't seem like the holes were there in the first half, struggling to run the ball, trying to integrate brand new wide receivers. And then in the second half, we started to see that line surge.
Yeah, I think it was maybe some of them. You know, there was a handful of guys that were, you know, we were close on some of the drives early on. And just for various reasons, we didn't sustain it. So maybe it looked like there was a huge change. I think, honestly, the both the halftime and then even that delay in the third quarter gave us even more time to kind of settle them down, regroup, talk through some of the things that we were seeing and doing. And, you know, we had a first year getting his first games and he played better as the game went on. We had one of the guys starting in a new position. You know, he was getting better as the game went on, just getting experience. You know, we had an injury early on. So then another guy came through and he was getting experience. So I think just playing with one another, getting that game experience, and then ultimately they were able to execute at a much better level as the game went on, which hopefully is a sign of, you know, conditioning and strength conditioning, like that, you know, freshness early on. You know, I thought they did a pretty good job putting up a wall early on in our run game, and we were having some productivity, but I also thought that a lot of those mistakes were on our own doing to kind of keep us from where we wanted to be. We were in too many third and longs early on, which ultimately led to us not being on the field. We weren't executing on some of our conversions, and I think that was one of the things we as a staff talked about and really tried to, you know, get the guys understanding how the first down and second down efficiency is going to help us stay on for those third and fourth downs later on. And then ultimately, not only the big play, you know, everyone thinks of the long run that EJ hit, which was a huge play in the game, but more importantly, like we were chipping off 6, 7, 8, 9, 10-yard runs and just put us in much more workable situations and therefore ultimately opened up some things in the passing game. So we knew going in Alfred was strong up front. They were experienced. And they were all what we thought they would be, so that didn't surprise us. I just thought it was more, we didn't get a lot of plays off in the first half. And again, I think I go back to when we watched the video, we were just off. A little bit of chemistry in the passing game, which if we can convert some of those throws, that opens up some things in the run game. And then once guys started to settle down, and again, some of our more experienced players kind of made a couple plays for us when we needed them to help keep us on the field in the second half. And then ultimately, we were leaning on the run game a little bit more there in the second half.
I thought Alfred had a very good game plan. Really, a lot of what hurt them last year was turnovers. I thought Kelly improved as a quarterback. He was accurate. Didn't turn the ball over. I mean, it was his punt team that had the first turnover, and then the last one was on the very last play or almost the last play of the game. So I thought their plan was pretty good, which was, okay, we know these guys might not be offensively what they've been in the past, so let's not make mistakes and let's not hand the game to them and keep it close, and they did.
Yeah, I think the last couple of years we played Alfred, we've been facing their first-time starting quarterback. So the last couple of years where now they have that experience back, I think he was smarter with the ball and you know, wasn't as confused with some of the things that our defense was trying to do against him. I think having that bigger running back as a, you know, captain as a senior, and they were big up front, they were leaning on in the run game, but not to the point where they're ripping us, but enough to kind of keep it honest. And again, I think the strength in their defense was to keep everything in front of us. And again, we didn't execute as we needed to in some of the things in the passing game. So it was, yeah, bend but don't break. And, you know, ultimately they did have a good game plan, and they were very confident coming through as they had the lead all the way till the tail end.
E.J. Taylor had the huge 72-yard run that set up your first points on the field goal. And, I mean, nobody touched him for about the first 40 yards or 50 yards of that run. And I remember saying right before that snap, I think it was a second and 10, and I said, boy, I'd really like to see him run here to get a third and short. Did the fact that the line was beginning to open up those holes and you were getting those 6-7 yards, do you think that influenced the play call to a run on that play?
Yeah, and I think you mentioned down. I heard you over the loudspeaker to tell me to run the ball, so I was listening to you, Ted. And I think you're right. I think the idea concept was, from a play calling standpoint, I was trying to do as much as possible, especially with that point in the game where I didn't know how many possessions we were going to have with the weather and whatnot, to make sure that we were in a workable third and fourth down. And so, I trust our run game. I just think, like, if you look back on it, we had what we call drive killers that first half. There was a couple situations we had a positive play. There was a holding. There was a false start. Like, I felt like we were calling third and longs too many times, or second and change. You know, so second and 10 to me is still a workable down. Let's get to a workable third down. And at that point, they were changing up some of the things from a coverage standpoint, so we felt like it was a good down to run. We did a really good job, and I think, like I said, with Quinn Brogy went down with an injury, a lot of props to Tyrese Taylor coming in and doing well in that position. Javon James starting as a freshman, got better and better as the game went on. Ben Goodell playing his first game out at right tackle. So even though there was experience up front, it changed in the flow of that game. And I thought our left side of the line was playing really well with Ethan Kowalski and Ashton Mejias. So, like, some of those runs were up to that side a little bit more, and that's when we hit some of our better runs, was just kind of matching up our personnel with where we thought Alfred's personnel was going to be. And we blocked it up well. EJ ended up hitting, and Alfred came with a Cobra blitz, you know, coming off the side. So then they were out of place, which allowed us to get to the second level. Young receiver had a good block downfield, and, you know, that flipped the field position, because at that point we weren't winning it necessarily with our offense, defense, and special teams, which was also different from the last couple of Alfred games. We've had the better field position. Honestly, for a good chunk of that first half, they had the better field position. So I thought that was important, not only to get points, but that also flipped the field position. And even though we were still down that last possession until we took the final score, that last quarter of the game or so, we had the better field position, which was putting more pressure on Alfred and their play calling, and ultimately on the defense side of the ball to defend a shorter field. So I thought that was really important.
I thought the winning touchdown was a great play call and terrific execution. You had Lucas Ruby going motion left to make the defense think you're running to that strong side. EJ Taylor went out in the flat as a possible pass receiver to the left, so the defense is thinking they're going that way. And then Johnny rolls back, hides the ball in his hip beautifully. You know, sometimes quarterbacks can get lazy on fakes. They kind of just make a half fake. Almost like a Statue of Liberty, held it on his hip, takes off right, and then within 2 yards of the goal line, if Johnny Colombi gets there, he's getting it. I mean, that guy has a great nose for the goal line.
Yeah, there's a couple things you said there that I'm really proud of in terms of Johnny Colombi's progression. You know, as a young quarterback, he took pride in the little things in terms of, you know, after you give a mesh, carrying out the fake and the handoff. And, for example, we had a JV game on Sunday, and that was one of the coaching points for my younger quarterbacks, is like carrying out runs and fakes and things that maybe they're not there yet with. But Johnny's done a really good job with his ball handling in terms of, you know, play action or when we are keeping it. And again, getting on the perimeter, he had a run pass option. He had Kevin Christ open in the flat, but also saw some things that, like, when I walked through that play with Johnny, his mind was in the right spot from the beginning to the end, all the way through. And that's what you want. And that point of the game, I was trying to call things in our best playmakers' hands, and I trust Johnny making good decisions there. And that's a run pass option in terms of he has the ability to throw it if it's open. If not, we get him in the open space, and he's a good athlete. And then the second part about how he finishes, you know, he's taken a lot of pride in terms of readying his body. You know, he's long, and people don't give him he's a strong individual, so he's able to break some tackles. And I always tell our quarterbacks, you know, when we're running there, we're running back at that point. We got to be able to take care of the football and finish forward. And you know, I told them and said, whether we're first and goal at the one or whatnot, we're in good position to score. The competitor in him said he wasn't going to make it first and goal. He wanted to go get the touchdown, and I thought it was a great heads-up play and really just a gutty competitive play by Johnny right there.
When the game was scoreless, when you were down 7-0, when the offense was trying to find its way, the defense just came out and just got stop after stop after stop, said, here's the ball, go get us one.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, our defense sometimes takes so much pride in it that, honestly, when Elfert scored the one and they hit that big play to get down there and then they came back and scored, it was really more just settling them down and saying, it's okay. You know, and I think it was important for them to trust that the offense was going to eventually get there. I would have wanted it to happen earlier, to be honest with you. We had many opportunities and just were leaving what we thought should have been points on the board. We you know, we fumbled in the score zone. We missed a field goal. There was a time when we had three plays in a row we should have executed and we were off the field. So it was not that I didn't think we could move the ball. It was more about getting down there and scoring against an experienced defense that Elfert does a really good job making you earn the seven. And, you know, foreshadowing for our opponent this week, they do a very, very good job of the same. So, like, as our offense grows and matures and evolves as the season goes on, we're going to have to do a much better job. We're typically been a team that does well scoring in the score zone. It was not our strong point on Friday. And that'll have to be better as we move forward.
What made their number 11 so good? It just didn't seem like you could tackle him all day.
Yeah, he was when we played him early last year, he had a couple times he was open and either missed a throw or he dropped it. And he got better as the season went on. And I think, no doubt, like, he was their main target. He was their main offense. And there was a couple times where we either were out of place or missed some tackles, but to credit, I always give credit where it's due. Like, he's a good athlete and a good playmaker. You could tell that they wanted to get the ball in his hands. And I thought our defense made some adjustments, like, through the middle part of that game. But by the end, we were doing a better job trying to minimize his ability to get open. But I thought it was a good game plan. And that's the other part going into week one. You don't always have – you're going off a film from the previous year. Teams are much different by the time we faced them. I think he's developed into a much better player, and I think he'll be a good player for them moving forward all season.
Looked to me like there were a couple of secondary mistakes. On the touchdown, it looked like the DB got his back to the line of scrimmage, and you can't see the ball. And then on the pass interference at the other end of the field – anytime you're playing back to the line of scrimmage and the ball's underthrown, that's an easy penalty. All the receiver has to do is come back to the ball, make contact, and get the flag.
Yeah, you're 100% on point. There was a couple times where some of those balls they threw into coverage, I thought we had a clear interception that we missed, and their guy came up with it, number 11. So a couple of those 50-50 balls, we could have done a better job of playing the ball in the air, or being more aggressive, whether you're playing through the body or through the ball. And then you're right, you know, we had a guy making his first start at corner who the ball for the touchdown, I think he could have played a little bit better, and I think with experience he'll know how to squeeze out and really kind of finish off the play. We didn't really finish through the catch, and I think that's where we take pride down is making sure that it's not over until the play is fully complete through. And as a DB in that coverage, he's got to play all the way through the body and the ball right there. And then 100%, we got to do a better job, especially late in the game and as they're driving, not to give them the easy first down and the easy yardage on the pass interference by, you know, I think it was he'd gotten behind us. We got to recover, but then get our eyes back to the quarterback.
Looked to me on their last possession that they were playing for three in the overtime. Is that the way you saw it?
I thought so, but at the same time, I think once they got that penalty that kind of got them in range, they maybe were a little too greedy, you know, going for the end zone. There was twice where I thought we had really good pressure that they one should have been a hold that they didn't call. They got out of the pocket. The second one, even on the interception, we were chasing them down. So I think one of those situations, and again, I give them credit. I think they were, once they got in field goal range, I think they were going for the three. But I also didn't know if they felt confident their field goal kicker had missed a kick earlier in the game. So maybe their thought was, let's go try to get the win right now. You know, again, I think that was the exciting part. It took us too long to get the defense the lead, but, you know, that was our thinking, is to get it back out there and hope that the defense could preserve it. Cause at that point it was going to be really tough with the time on the clock to be able to come back with a rebuttal. So, you know, that's hopefully the defense will have the ability this year to play with that lead and be able to finish it off end.
I thought the defensive line played real well, particularly Billy Brosco and Dylan Williams-Mahler, two guys that hadn't played. One's a first year. One had been a running back for a couple of years. I thought those guys really acquitted themselves well.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, I think the reality, we talked about it last week, there's a lot of guys that are going to get some first-time experience. And Dylan Williams-Mahler was a versatile athlete, had an injury early in his career, and I give him a lot of credit in terms of returning back from it. You know, at one point was a linebacker. He was playing tight end, and we saw in the spring we thought we needed some strength and explosiveness at the D-line with what we were graduating and losing last year. And I think he went over and added a really good firepower there. And then Bill Brosco was a young guy that we thought had the potential, and he's still kind of working his way back into it, but like he got the Rookie of the Week, not for just our team, but for the conference. And I thought his ability to disrupt the inside, if we can keep him progressing along with those other D linemen, that's a good sign. Because like I said, if we have the linebackers, that they stay healthy, that they can run to the ball, make some plays, I always think it's a one and loss to the line of scrimmage. And I thought, even though early in the game, it took us a little bit. You talked about the offensive line and the defensive line. They were huge parts for us to be able to come back and win that game late. And especially in the second half, I thought both the O-line and D-line played better as the game went on.
Tell us Brosco's story. He came in from Drexel, Division I, but they don't have football.
Correct. Yeah, so I was his main recruiting coach. I was actually recruiting his brother, Matt, first. Haverford School is a really good school down in Philadelphia, and we've been able to pull some really good guys from that conference, and was able to start talking. His brother came up, and you know, I knew of his brother the year before. He was the defensive MVP. You're tough to find that as a D lineman. He's a disruptor and really good. Both of them were great wrestlers, wrestling in through all the way in their careers. And Billy was on a scholarship wrestling at Division I Drexel. So wasn't aware of that, and I was starting to recruit his brother, Matt. And then once they kind of got through wrestling season and the family and Matt was going to be coming here, then we found out that he might want to come with his brother. So obviously we're pleased to have both of them here. I think Matt's been injured through preseason, but we think he can be a really good running back and hopefully get him healthy here and get him back out there. But Billy's been able to make a huge contribution at a position that we needed to in the inside. So he's still, again, he's a really good player, but he's still kind of getting back into the play of football. You know, and I saw him, earlier this week and just said, feels good. The body's a little different coming out of the wrestling season than football season. And I think he's only going to get better and better. We're excited about his future.
You didn't get a quarterback sack. You didn't get a lot of quarterback pressure. And I thought you probably blitzed less than I've ever seen in years. Their line was huge. What was your thinking in terms of not trying to bring a blitz?
I think they were prepared for it. I think that was a huge part of the game plan. So early in the game, I think they saw they had some answers for it. They also felt like we wanted to see like what they could do against our defense, and really minus the one or two big plays, they didn't really hurt us. So you look at total yardage and all that, and I think Coach Green and the defensive staff just thought it was going to be better to play a little bit more coverage in this situation. Part of that was we had some young DBs out there getting some experience. So, unless we want to give them an easy one in some of the man coverage, we want to see if they could throw into the zone. And again, the quarterback did a better job with his ball location, but he also did throw it into coverage. We thought we could have gotten a couple interceptions there that, I'm sure looking back on that, we might want to play a little differently. But unless we needed it to, we didn't think that was going to be the right answer at that time. And we also saw that they were targeting 11 a little bit more, so we wanted to play a little bit more into coverage for him.
You ask a lot of your linebackers. I mean, you may be bringing three of them on one play, and then on another play, they're 25 yards down the field in coverage. I mean, Mike McGee had four fumble recoveries last year, number one in the country, and he makes the great interception and the great tiptoe of the sideline to end the game.
What a play. And on that play, and I can see it, Jamin Bliss is going to blitz the quarterback, is chasing him down, almost ready for the sack, pushes him out, and as he's throwing it, Jamin's hitting the quarterback, and then Mike McGee did a great job. They got their running back out of the backfield, and they were trying to run him up the sideline. Mike does a great job of coverage, gets his eyes around, and then really turned into the offensive player at that point. And I joked around with him, if he keeps catching it like that, he might be playing some wide receiver pretty soon. So beautiful, not only just the catch, the concentration, but to get the feet in bounds there. And that's who Mike is. I love Mike. I love the way he competes. He holds himself to a really high standard, and he's gotten better each year, and we're excited about what we're going to see from him this year. But like, that was a big time play, similar to what Johnny made on the other side of the ball offensively. When we need someone to make a play, And I thought Mike McGee came up with a huge stop there at the end.
Vicente Lyon returned from a season of injury to punt, and I forgot how strong a leg he has. There was one he kicked it, and I said, well, he kind of popped that one up, and it wound up being 38 yards. It's not bad for a pop-up.
Yeah, and he even admitted he's still kind of getting back in the flow coming off of his injury, missing last year. But I think as he goes on, like Tuesday's practice, he was kicking some monster kicks. So I think the more and more he kind of gets back into the game speed reps and whatnot, hopefully that will be a strong point for us. I thought we were going to be able to win the kicking game, the special teams, a little bit more than we actually did on Friday. That being said, there were some huge kicks late. And you think of Toby's field goal. You think about some of the punts that Vicente had. So I think those two guys had a huge part in hopefully the tail end of winning that field position, like we said, in the second half of the game.
Off to Virginia this Saturday, Randolph-Macon, Final Four team. They lost to Cortland, which won the national championship. Let's start with the scheduling of that game and the scheduling philosophy. With eight new teams in the NCAA tournament this year, I think the thinking is that the Liberty League now is probably going to get a second team almost every year, if not every year. So if you beat a team like this, fantastic. If you don't, you still have a little better strength of schedule than if you just blow somebody away 63-0.
Yeah, I wish it was the ability to schedule it when they made that change. This schedule was done two years in advance.
Oh, really?
Yeah, okay. So there's a – how long do we have here? There's a lot of layers. We had teams that backed out on us. The Empire 8 decided to not play Liberty League schools a couple years ago, so we lost some of the normal teams we were playing. I was also at that time making sure that if you looked at the old model when 32 teams got in, strength of schedule was huge. So in our process right now, we want to be playing on our non-conference as strong a teams as we can, and also in areas and regions that we're going to try to recruit. So we've been able to recruit in the DMV. So candidly, we were close to going out to play teams in Wisconsin, Texas, budget-wise, and for various reasons, that wasn't necessarily in the plans. But our decision for this one was to replace all the Empire 8 teams we were losing in our schedule. And Randolph-Macon to me is a school that, like, they remind me a lot of when we were really good in that stretch in the middle 2000s, when we were, you know, Final Four, Elite Eight type teams. That's who Randolph-Macon is right now. I mean, they're on a roll right now. This is a really strong program that's done really well in the ODAC conference for many years. So I wanted to go put someone on our schedule that was going to be a playoff type team, not only to increase strength of schedule, but also to get, like, our guys, I want them to see this is going to be a playoff environment where they're going to go there, there's going to be tailgating, they're going to be yelling at us. Like, it's going to be a hostile environment with a team that's, you know, they've won championships in some of their other main sports, and football has been knocking on the door. Like I said, last year as a Final Four team, I think they finished 13-1. They're a strong, strong program, and this is going to be a really good test for us. So this was scheduled like 2 years ago. Now, looking back on it now with the adjustment with 40 getting in, strength schedule is never going to hurt us. We still know we got to go through and win our conference, which is going to have already strength of schedule very high there. We just felt like as much as we could, this was going to be a good opponent to put on our schedule. And, unfortunately, some of the schedule's changing for future years because of all these musical chairs and how the scheduling's working. But I have a lot of respect for this is going to be one of the better opponents we've played as a non-conference team in a while.
Now, while this is a good program, they're starting over in many ways. Their quarterback didn't play last year. They graduated a 1,000-yard rusher. They graduated about 8 or 9 all-league guys. So, I mean, it's not like you can just punch their ticket to the Final Four again. And their game one, numbers-wise, wasn't spectacular. They had 4 takeaways, which was the big part of that game.
Absolutely. And I think it's like anything. I think it's like our team. Like, when we were really good, you have to reinvent yourself year. And that's why, like, we go with that, you know, Team 130 adage. Every year is different. And again, we're not the same team as last year. Randolph-Macon's not the same team as last year. And I think both teams are looking back like, we have to play better in week one, and we got the win. I'm sure Randolph-Macon saying they can play better and how they got the win. But where they lost some things on offense, they still have a lot coming back. It's their defensive side of the ball where they have a lot coming back. So no doubt they're a different team, and we'll talk about some of the personnel, I'm sure. You mentioned the quarterback position. They graduated 2 or 3 really special players on that offense last year. But this kid's a Division I transfer who played at the Division I level. Like, there's not much of a drop-off. He just doesn't have as much experience in a Randolph-Macon jersey yet. But he's a talented quarterback, and it all starts with their offensive line. Like, this is – like, I think of when we were really good back in the mid-2000s, when we were running the ball and our line of scrimmage, these guys are going to stay in 12 personnel with two tight ends and a big physical line, and they want to just pound you with the run, and then be able to hit you with the play action shots over the top. You know, and they have a stable of running backs. They have three or four running backs that are all really good and really strong. So, yeah, they graduated some of those guys, but what they have coming back fits their mold. Like, they're built to win at the line of scrimmage on both sides of the ball, and not to take anything away from the other, but most teams can't get past the line of scrimmage with these guys. So it's going to be a significant test, and we talked about the line of scrimmage, you know, having to come up and play well against Alfred. Both sides of the ball is going to be even stronger in our opponent this week.
Their O-line is one of the smallest I've seen. They're 257 average. Do they do a lot of scheming and stunting kind of stuff?
Yeah, they're weight room strong guys. So I think that'll be the biggest test is, like, they're not as big as Alfred, but they're going to move better. So they're going to do a lot of things that are going to get the ball to the perimeter with their speedy backs. You know, they're pulling guards. They love power and some different things in their screen game. So like I said, in a way, they mirror our line when we were really good. We were bigger, but we've never been the biggest. We're not always able to get those the huge offensive linemen. So we're going with guys that are smart, tough, strong, pound for pound strong, and that's how they are on both sides. Like, even on the defensive line, they're not going to have that 300-350-pound guy that's not movable, but they all can move, and they're pound for pound really, really strong guys. So, yeah, their offensive line, they run some gap and some zone schemes. They'll get to the perimeter when they can. And then from there, be able to set up some screens and some play action.
And defensively, it's a 3-4. It sounds like they've got very, like you do, very active linebackers.
Yeah, it's interesting. They actually play more with a 4-man front. They exchange in the 2-deep that it's a 3-4. They'll mix it in, but we expect, because that kid that drops off is truly a DN. We're going to expect 4 men in the front with 3 linebackers choked up. They're front 7. 6 of those 7 return on defense. They have 8 starters return on defense. All 3 linebackers were super productive for them, and they have a couple D-linemen that are disruptive. They remind me a little bit of some of the D-line that we saw against Washington Jefferson a couple years ago in terms of interior guys that can move and are strong. You know, some guys are big, some guys are fast. When you find those D linemen that have the ability to do both stop the run and rush the passer, these guys are pretty complete, and not many teams have been able to run the ball pretty successful on them. So it'll be a good test for our guys, and honestly, with some of the injuries or where we're at, we're going to be having some new starters up front this week. So we're going to be younger than even we were last week at O-line. It'll be a really good look to see kind of who's ready to go and who can step up and get in the flow of the game, hopefully gain that experience as the game goes on.
So the old football cliche is the biggest week is between 1 and 2. What's the focus on being better and taking another step for Team 130 in week 2?
I think part of it is we had 21 guys out against Alfred. So hopefully getting some of those guys back. Now, we did lose. We lost 2 or 3 starters on offense that won't be playing here in week 2. So it's next guy up mentality. So we're going to gain some experience. I thought defensively, honestly, like, they played pretty well against Alfred, but we still missed some things. We missed some plays in terms of how we played the ball in the air. A couple, first downs through penalties that we need to, like, clean up a little bit. But honestly, the defense side of the ball, this is going to be a much better test. We're going to have to play better up front, tackle well, because this offense is going to have the ability with that strong arm of the Division I transfer quarterback. But up front, they want to run it, play action. So we're going to see how we match up in the run game there. From a special team standpoint, their kicking game is strong. Like, their kickers, their punters, this is going to be a really good test. Randolph Macon always wins the field position, so this is going to be a good test for us to see if we can flip the field position on them. And on our side of the ball, we talked about it. Like, we got to be more efficient to what we had. I don't think it was so much that we weren't attacking the field and run pass early against Alfred. We had drive killers, and we were missing some things just chemistry-wise in the passing game that hopefully that we can take that step forward, because we'll have to be balanced to beat Randolph Macon. And with 8 starters back, 2 corners, the 6 guys up front, it's hard to get to their safeties because their front's so good. So even though they have 2 new starters at safety, they're still the guys with experience. There's not a single guy that's going to be playing for them that hasn't played significant games or played in the playoffs for them last year as they were on their run. So for us, as we're putting, you know, there's going to be 6-7 freshmen on offense out there playing, how are we now going to be able to go match that experience level and not let the moment be too big? That's what we're trying to get our guys. Focus on what we can focus on. Yes, it's a quality opponent, but Elford was a good quality opponent. We need to take care of Hobart before we can take care of our opponent. That's the focus on the offense side of the ball. And again, I think still evaluating. We have some young guys on special teams. That's going to be a huge week for us to see. There weren't many special teams with a low scoring game to see some of the kickoff teams on both coverage and return teams, and get Vicente and Toby and some of our guys going to see how we can hopefully flip the field position when we need to have the kicking game take over.
That's the Hobart Football Podcast, Episode 36, with Coach Kevin DeWall. 12 noon kickoff, Randolph-Macon in Virginia this Saturday. You can find this podcast wherever you go to get your podcasts, Apple, Spotify, Google, and, of course, all your athletics information on the official website of HWS Athletics, and that is hwsathletics.com. Coach, thanks and good luck.
Thanks, Todd.